Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Beating Riskaminator by drawing more cards?
Yeah, next on Eternal Turtles.
Hey, I just want to give a quick shout out to all of our Patreon supporters out there. Thank you to the Dirtle Maniacs. If you want to be a Dirtle Maniac, go to patreon.com/eternaldirtles and help support the channel. It keeps things going. It keeps things updated. Thanks so much for watching. On with the show.
Hello and welcome to Eternal Dirtles. I'm your host, Zach Clark, and with me this week, because Phil is doing a wrestling musical, Tony Scipione is here. Tony, how are you, man?
I'm good. Happy to be back on the show.
Heck yeah.
Talking about my favorite thing, Storm.
Glad to have you, man. So we're going to be talking about, this is the last episode of Storm Week, and I figure, we want to end this with a banger episode, right? So we've got... We've got a couple things to go over. One, I want to talk about your journey getting to Storm as a Magic player, and then you have a couple of deck lists that are pretty interesting. And right now you're 8-1 against Riskaminator?
With what I'm the latest, the hottest mono blue, drawing a billion cards. Yes,
yep. That's amazing. All right, so let's talk about let's go into your history. Your villain arc with Storm, as I like to call it.
I like that. So I've played this game since I was a little kid, since Revised.
You're in there for about as long as I've been in there.
Yep. Kitchen table. I have two older brothers, so I don't know how much you could actually describe it as playing Magic back then, but I've been involved in the game in some way. Got back in a little more seriously in like high school. Actually played a lot of Control, Burn. I liked to play Esper Control back then, and I always had a burn list going. So, but I kind of took a hiatus for about, 7, 8, 9 years, something like that. And I got back in my most serious stunt in 2017, bought back into Burn just because it's a cheap way to get into the format, get some reps in, see what's going on. Actually went 18-4 my first bunch of FNMs and weeklies. Yeah, with Burn, it was in the Deathrite Shaman era.
Oh,
era,
nice.
Right, yeah, before yeah. They banned that. but it's funny.
It's great to Searing Blood an X2, right?
Oh yeah. but funny enough, I pretty much the whole time, because after that I moved into Delver. You get a couple dual lands, fetch lands, but an aggressive blue red Delver. But it's like a natural progression, right? But the whole time I was consuming Storm content, whether it be Cyrus CG, Brian Cook, the major Storm content creators at that time that were putting up results, and slowly but surely built my way into Storm and started playing a little bit of Ruby Storm because it was cheaper. And then eventually moved that into what became a new deck, the Epic Gamble, to which I actually still played. In Philly, in the tournament that I saw you guys at.
Yeah.
There I went 6-0-12-0 in the Swiss and then lost back-to-back winning. But I got tired of people, asking if the deck is dead. The deck is not dead.
I would say no, it's definitely not dead. Not if you did that well.
Right. I tend to, at events, I'm a creator, so I'm pushing whatever the latest thing that I'm building. If it's not competitive, then I'm not going to be pushing it. I create a lot of jank, in between. You tend to not see it as much until it really comes to the surface and is actually successful, at least to some degree. Of course, right now the difficulty is the Scaminator menace. But I know you had some specific questions about Black Saga Storm, right?
Yeah. Well, before we get into that, I want to ask you one quick question. Sure. Super nostalgia question here. Hmm. When you started playing Magic, what was the one rule that you got wrong? Eternal Dirtles is sponsored by Tales of Adventure. You can go to toamagic.com, use the code DIRTLES for 5% off your order, and you're going to get that whole order in one package. No more waiting for 5 or 6 or 12 packages to show up at your door so that you can finish your deck. toamagic.com, code DIRTLES for 5% off, and you'll be directly supporting the show.
Like in the very beginning?
Yeah, in the very beginning.
We would just... We called it Fast Bond, and we would always play it. We'd basically just say, like, you want to play Fast Bond? Like, yeah. That just meant you could just put all your lands into play when you started.
Oh, that's awesome.
So turn one, lands, cast your spells. Like, that's how we started.
I used to put all my lands under the card that I cast. So if, like, I put out, like, a Sea Serpent, everything went under the Sea Serpent, and it just stayed there until the Sea Serpent died.
Okay.
that's why
it's a complicated game.
We're really powerful at the time.
Kitchen table magic is wild.
Why would you cast creatures?
That's great.
So let's shift gears and talk about Black Saga Storm, because that's the deck that you're kind of known for. At least Saga Storm, you're kind of known for. And you know, you've sort of created this deck archetype almost out of thin air.
Yeah, Black Saga Storm was initially a Dono deck. So Discord user Control Stacks Delete wanted me to... It was like a brew challenge, right? Like, he gave me kind of a loose list and said, hey, this is what I want you to do. And it was a Black Painter Storm list that also had Karns. It was kind of all over the place, but of course I cut out the Karns, and that's naturally, of course. But so for a while we were playing Painter and Grindstone just alongside an ad nauseum, a mono black ad nauseum list with Urza Sagas. And it was immediately very powerful. And that kind of, you know, progressed. And then eventually we wound up dropping the Painter combo, because ultimately it just wasn't really necessary or needed. But over the past year or so, the deck has really progressed, because the last time I played it seriously was SCG Baltimore, to which I took top four, getting knocked out by Bosh and Roll. But at that point, I didn't really have any more, deck construction to work on or anything. It was basically, it's a project that I felt was largely finished. And then there were enough very good players still working on it. So, as long as I had other projects I wanted to work on, I more or less moved on from it. And then they printed Beseech the Mirror. So Beseech the Mirror created a number of different ways to play the deck. Or even before that was printed, I had been fiddling a little bit with, we call it, Fetchland Saga Storm or Bug Saga Storm. Or whether you go four color, three color, whatever. It's basically, instead of mono Black Saga Storm, you're adding some fetches and duels so that you can play stuff like Veil of Summer, Abrupt Decay, and not get hit as hard by Null Rod, play Brainstorm, all these things that you can do. In my opinion, most of the variants are very close to each other in terms of power level. They just have pros and cons differences, right? So you have that traditional mono Black Saga Storm. You have where you can play fetches and duels. And you have, as I was telling you earlier, four very different versions, right? Those two. In addition to, now you have Beseech, right? So you can play a mono black Saga Storm with Beseech in it. Most people play two Beseeches in that. I don't need to get into the nitty gritty, but it's basically just taking a classic mono Black Saga Storm list and including Beseech the Mirror, which means you're playing Guy's Will. It's a little more clunky, but the power level and consistency goes up. There's some trade-offs, right? Triple black can be tough, whatever.
You play Dark Rituals.
This is true. and then you have probably the most recent and maybe the closest thing to standing out as potentially optimal and better than the others, and has very recently put up some results and a lot of people are enjoying it, myself included.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
But again, I haven't really put too much work into it in quite some time now, and it's flourished into this, and it's cool to just kind of, you know, watch at this point, honestly. But I don't know if you know Quentin Coldman or Coleman? I think Coldman. I don't know. My apologies. I think Quentin, actually. I'm butchering it. I'm sorry. But he made, it's a mono black. And I've made brews similar to this in the past when I was messing around with like Spanish Inquisition and turning it into a Entomb Wheels deck, but it's still Black Saga Storm because it's primarily mono black with sagas. It's a storm deck. It does not play Ad Nauseam. It does play Beseech the Mirror, but it also plays Entomb, LED Echo, and it plays Bowmasters. Yep.
Okay.
It's very efficient. It's like a basically a Belcher deck because it's turn one-ing a lot. And when it's not, it has very solid side plans with, of course, there's a saga in addition to just having Bowmasters, which not only works towards the combo, but is also just good on its own. The deck is spectacular, very powerful, and has put up a number of results, top eights, challenge wins, that sort of thing recently. So if you were to really pin me down and say, hey, I want to play Black Saga Storm, what do you think is the best version? I keep seeing all sorts of different stuff. I would basically say that version is the only thing that would stand out as potentially, I don't know, 100%, but probably better.
Well, we will definitely collect those deck lists from you and include them in the Moxfield links below, just so that we can show those off, of course. So right now, you're on a totally different build, not Black Saga Storm. You're playing something that has been dominating Riskaminator the last couple of weeks.
Yes, so
Eternal Dirtles is proud to be sponsored by Moxfield.com. Moxfield is the best deck building website on the internet. You can find all of my and Phil's decks in links below, including decks from this episode. And if you do, you'll be directly supporting the channel.
This is an offshoot of the deck that I created before and played in, as well as 11 others across the Eternal Weekend events, known as Paradoxical Outcome. So it's a very similar to an 8-cast shell, but instead of playing these fair threats, it's playing the One Ring, it's playing a Paradox Engine, and it's playing a combo kill. Traditionally, previously, it was Aetherflux Reservoir was the kill. Now I'm using Walking Ballista because it's more low to the ground, it kills Bowmasters easily. There's some different, you know, reasons. But yeah, so that deck had across the three Eternal Weekends had literally the highest win rate. I think it was 64% or something. I mean, there were only 11 pilots, but it's a high enough number where it did really well. I think I went 8-3 at Eternal Weekend, you know, NA, and there were two individuals who were in the top 32 with it. So that was pretty cool to see. But like most of the decks that I have created and have been playing, it struggles a lot against Scaminator. Rescaminator is, if I could say it, bullshit. you have to specifically address it.
I'll allow that. Yeah,
we'll allow it. Because I've been doing a lot of messing around with Jewel, right, as well, which is a whole another beast that outside of Scaminator we've had a ton of success with. It's just another, not Storm, but Storm adjacent deck that is extremely powerful, but specifically has a lot of difficulty with Scaminator. So the thing about Scaminator is that there are so many things that you have to address that unless you're specifically good against it, I think you need to have significant control elements to be able to deal with it, because you need to be able to stop the extremely powerful things going on, and then you need to be able to close the game as well. And I had seen this PO deck as having potential to be able to do that because it draws a ton of cards. It has Force of Will. It has that controlling aspect, and then it can just win out of nowhere with a combo kill. Having said that, all the cards draw cards. Pretty much like half the deck just draws cards, and that's specifically bad against Bowmasters.
So you're winning with Walking Ballista. How are you generating all this mana?
Paradox Engine, primarily.
Paradox Engine. There we go. Okay.
Yeah. If you get Paradox Engine and Emery, there are a lot of infinite combos. Pyrite Spell Bomb, Petal, you get infinite mana. You shoot them down infinitely. Or we play Walking Ballista because if there's a one ring trigger, we can still kill them. I can just make the Ballista huge and then kill them in their upkeep. Same thing with Aetherflux Reservoir. That's why that was one of the things that was chosen as a win con for, you know, previously. But basically, I took this PO deck and said, well, how can we make this actually be able to deal with Scaminator? Because as it is currently, it's still difficult. Yeah. Right. And Pyrite Spell Bomb is basically just the answer. Because for a while I was splashing green to play, you know, like Veil of Summer and Carpet of Flowers on the sideboard. And, you know, it was okay. It was pretty good against tempo, but Scaminator, again, just different story. And now I'm playing a bunch of main deck Pyrite Spell Bombs. Three. Lava Spur Boots is a card that has given this deck a huge boost.
I was just about to ask. I was like, because then that allows you to go off in the same turn you cast your Emery, right?
I have even been playing Lightning Greaves, and I have on a number of instances literally asked, like, please, can we just have a one mana boots? Can we just have a one mana boots? Because it's Emery becomes a liability, right? If you play it, it can flip over one of your win cons or your engine or whatever it is. And then if she dies, well, now you have to get her online again, which isn't a huge deal or wouldn't be if you didn't have to wait a whole turn. I have to play her and then protect her for a whole turn, take another turn. Like, no, I won't win now. This deck is interested in winning now on this turn. And Boots allows you to do that. So, and the fact that you can get it from Saga, and it's just so good with the constructs, the card is incredible. In fact, I was one of the iterations of this recent list. I was in the middle of like discussing it in Discord, and somebody mentioned, why aren't you playing Boots? And I was like, what Boots? And then they, you know, linked me to the card. I was like, oh my God, they printed the card that I wanted.
Yeah, that was a card. As soon as I saw it, I was like, I think 8-cast might want this because like, there's just times when you're just like, oh, their shields are down. I'll attack with both my constructs right now. Right. But the more I looked at that card, the more I was like, man, that's just really good. Like, how many times have I cast Emery in an 8-cast deck and been like, man, I sure would like to have gotten the value out of this card immediately, you know? And it seems like everyone's catching on to like, yeah, it just turns out giving Emery haste is really good.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, that's basically the deck. It's an 8-cast shell. I'm only running 12 lands. I'm playing AKs. Because it's the next cheapest and high velocity draw engine that initially early on, it's not a huge deal. It's pitching to Force of Will. Occasionally you flip one over with Emery, which is pretty sweet, and you get some value there. But it allows you to move into the mid to late game and still have, you know, an alternate draw engine in the event that, I don't know, someone's needled your ring or whatever craziness that can happen within a game of Magic, right? But yeah.
So that's interesting because you're able to just get with the Pyrite Spell Bomb, you're able to just get rid of the Bowmasters and then continue your plan. Is that's pretty much the plan there?
Yeah. So we have Bowmasters covered with that. We have their combo covered because we have forces and we're drawing a ton of cards, and we have our own combo that is threatening enough where they can't just mulligan to a fast combo hand. We don't care too much about the discard aspect because one, we have Saga. Two, we can dump our hand very fast. So if we're on the play, we can dodge a lot of discard. And three, we have Emery that tends to not care about discard. And the one ring, if I can land a one ring, that's into like, it has everything it needs to beat the deck. And in theory and on paper, it looked great. And now in practice, I can say, I mean, it's a small sample size, only 9 matches, but being 8-1,
yeah, seems pretty good.
And they feel good. It's not like I don't walk away feeling like I got away with something. It has felt pretty convincing.
Yeah, when you hit that like spot where you're like, oh, this is dominating. That's a whole feeling. You mm-hmm. can tell immediately, like, okay, this is exactly where I want to be.
Yep.
One of the great things about this deck is that, you know, and to the average person that knows a little bit about this deck, this is obvious. But the fact that you do have a B plan of just like, hey, I've got like 8 artifacts out, and here's a construct, you're dead. You know, like you can just get people with
two of them the saga at once. Plan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, two of them at once even. So like you're hitting for like 8 on accident, or I guess like 15, right? Like if you've got like an 8 and you've got like another 8, the boots is going to give it the extra +1. So like you can just accidentally like kill someone out of nowhere sometimes.
You can. And we don't play Shadow Spear, but we do play a Manifold Key, which makes things unblockable, which you'd be surprised just how often we win with Manifold Key. Like a lot.
Yeah, I feel like in this particular deck, I mean, Manifold Key is great, but you know, having your Morgul Knife, your Shadow Spear, probably doesn't do much in this particular deck because you're generally not racing your opponent in a combat math situation. So Lifelink is it might buy you a couple turns, but that's not really what you're about.
I mean, honestly, the deck is pretty desperate for life gain. Because we lose a lot of life with the One Ring. And actually to the point where I don't even play Ancient Tomb anymore. It used to play Grim Monolith, but I don't play Grim Monolith anymore, and I don't play Ancient Tomb. It's way, way lower to the ground now. It's a lot of fun. It's like by turn 3, you're usually about halfway through your deck.
Wow. Jeez. So what do you think the weakness of this deck is? Or do you not want to...
Oh, come on. Come on, you can't go asking me that.
Actually, no, go on.
Fair green is challenging. It's always been a challenge for this deck.
Yeah.
Probably easier for Jewel, which is a different thing in and of itself. But this deck invites itself into the mid to late game often. And when you're playing against something like, say, Cradle Control that has roughly 47, maybe 48 Collect Roofs in their deck, it can be difficult to fight them all off. I mean, if they like naturally have Oof and cast it and you counter it, that's a way to, because then they can't, you know, their Green Sun Zeniths aren't Collect Roof anymore. But usually not the case. So that can be a difficult matchup. But we have sideboard cards for it, and it's not like a 20-80. There are no matchups that are like that. I have been shredding with the deck, so it feels really good. I mean, I still, we won't get into the whole ban talk, but I still, yeah, despite having success with this deck, I do still think Bowmasters is bullshit. I do still think it should be banned, and I think it will be. We'll gloss, you know, past that, but
yeah,
it's not like, oh, I found a build that beats it, so now I'm okay with Bowmasters. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, when I'm talking to people who are you know, masters of their deck, one of the things that often comes up in the comment section is it the nut behind the wheel? You know, I used to be a camera repair guy, and a lot of times when someone would bring in their camera, they'd say, oh, you know, my camera doesn't work, and I'd look at the camera and it's like perfectly fine. It's just like they, you know, didn't put batteries in or something. They'd be like, oh, it's the nut behind the wheel. It's the person piloting the deck that is the thing. Is this a situation where you're just that good at this deck, or is this a deck that belongs at a higher tier than it really should be?
This particular deck.
That was the worst anecdote ever.
No, I know what you're saying. I mean, there's a handful of Storm pilots, a small handful that are extremely good with Storm decks. And if you gave them, you know, any one out of like the 8 or 9 major Storm decks, they're going to do well in an event. Or if you gave it to 5 of them, you know, 3 out of 5 will do well, you know, however you want to put it. But having said that, this particular list I find it's the most powerful thing currently that I have created. I can say, I mean, I've played probably 60 matches with it, which is, it's not a huge sample size, but it's big enough to get a good feel for it.
Yeah, you can feel good for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I mean, that will change. Usually what happens is you create something powerful like this. You do well enough with it, enough people pick it up. And then once people get reps against it, then they start to, you get some brewer's advantage initially. Yeah. You know, people think they're playing against 8-cast or whatever it is. They're needling your Emery, and then you play a one ring and then they lose, you know, that sort of thing. But no, I do think it is just extremely powerful. And it brings a lot of people together from different archetypes, right? Because you can, people who play 8-cast feel comfortable with it to an extent. You know, they watch a little bit of content, they brush up on it a bit, and all of a sudden it makes, you know, sense to them. It can bring Mystic Forge people together, as well as just really any Storm pilot is still gonna, I mean, at its core, if you're a Storm pilot, you enjoy drawing cards.
Yes.
And going infinite.
I don't know any Magic player that doesn't enjoy drawing cards, honestly. That's actually, you know, not to like really shit on Urgish Bowmasters here, but like, you are Urgish Bowmasters, I like drawing cards.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yeah, Bowmasters is a big old jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I want to spend the last few minutes talking about a little bit about your channel. And so you're also part of the Magic Online creator program. So we both got in. So props to us. One of us deserved to get in. The other one is me. I was very lucky to get in, and you know, I'm going to try and do my best.
You guys create a lot of content, a lot of good content. So
we try.
You deserve to be in there.
Not a ton of Magic Online content yet, but we're you know, a lot of what we do is informed by Magic Online. Hmm. So I think that's why they allowed us to be part of the program. But to that end, you're prolific on there. You're constantly making content. Tell you know, the people who don't know, tell them a little bit about the content that you do make and sort of what your process is.
So currently, primarily, I do Twitch. I stream on Twitch. But I do and will, moving forward, have more and more YouTube content. It's certainly an area where there's a ton of growth. But I also have a Patreon. When I build decks, I tend to make sideboard guides.
All of these links will be below as well. So if you're interested in any of these decks, just, you know, look in the description. You'll find all of Tony's links below.
Yep. But it's tough. I mean, I'll have a little more time moving forward, and I'll get better and more up to date in terms of sideboard guides. It's difficult when I keep making different decks, and then once, you know, things change in the meta, or they print something different, then all of the decks across the boards will change. And then I have people asking me for updated sideboard guides for things. And
that is the hardest part of not being a one trick pony.
Right. I should have just stuck to
that's why I love Fenris Cloud, I know where to go for my sideboard guide for Infect every month, you know, like, okay, update is here and here, you know? But yeah, when you're, you know, like you, like me, I brew, you know, like, I'll tweak. I won't say I brew, but like, I'll take a deck and then be like, okay, like, you know, where does this deck need to be changed? You're like, what could be better about this deck? Like, a perfect example is that right now I'm playing a 5-color beanstalk control with like Dracos. So that's the bean packed deck with Draco, and it's playing Broadside Bombardiers, which is super cute. You're just like, haha, throw my Draco at you. Take 14.
But that's a lot.
The more I play, and you can get like a turn 3 kill with it. You're like, turn 2 Draco, untap, attack, hit you for 4, hit you for 14, hit you for 2, that's 20 damage. Super cool. Doesn't happen a lot. People know also, like, they're like aware now. So I think that Broadside Bombardiers is maybe not where I want to be with that deck, but that's like one of those things where like, you play a deck enough and you're like, okay, like, this is a good deck. What I need to do is figure out what the weak points are. In this particular scenario, the Bombardiers are the weak points. It's easy for me to like figure that out after like a couple of leagues where like people are like, yeah, no, that card's not staying on the board anymore. So then I'm like, okay, well, what, you know, then if I'm taking these two cards out, Like, what's impactful? You know, that's really where I live. But I say all that to say this: when you're that kind of content creator, you have to figure out ways to create content that is consumable by people that want to watch what you're doing. Yeah. And for me, it's like, I'm not going to create a sideboard guide for a deck that I play for like a month and a half, and then people like expect another one next month, you know?
Well, I'll give you an example. I mean, this recent list that we're talking about right now, I, you know, have been asked to, hey, I have an event coming up this weekend. I really want to play this list. Do you have a sideboard guide? And I'm over here. I mean, they asked me, that was less than 48 hours ago, and I've already, you know, 2-3 iterations out from when they asked me. Yeah. I tend to wait until the list is kind of settled. There was a point for a while where everyone wanted a new Black Saga Storm sideboard guide, and this is when Beseech the Mirror had been spoiled, and I was like, look, I'm not gonna, yeah, it's like, gonna get turned up on its head. Like, I'm not spending all this time making a guide and the deck's gonna be completely different. And that's exactly what happened. There's 4 different legitimate iterations now.
Yeah.
I'm not going to make people 4 different
by telling them to play that same deck too, you know, like
right
at that point.
But what I do have and what is on my Patreon are sideboard guides from previous lists. And I tend to not just do the plus and minus. There's also a little, like, you know, a little paragraph about the matchup, yeah, what I think is important in the matchup, that sort of thing. So you can take an old sideboard guide and you can gleam, okay, these are coming out, you know, so this is what I got to do with the current iteration.
One of the things I was talking to Bryant Cook in our last episode about was the difference between like now everyone does video content. Like that's the major way Magic content is consumed, but about written content and about how, like, how important that was for me when I used to do, cause I used to play Merfolk when I started this format, and I used to write these like long, drawn out, like, every single card in the sideboard and why it was there and why you wanted it to be for whichever match, you know, like I would literally, like, I wasn't writing a sideboard guide. I was writing a guide for each card in the sideboard, like completely different thing that nobody does anymore, because there's, I feel like the sideboard guide is the easier way to do that thing to get your point across. But what I was doing at the time was so much more comprehensive, and you know, it's hard to go back and be like, oh, you know, Spreading Seas is important because Caracas exists or something, you know, stuff like that, or like you can mess up a Jund deck or whatever. But you know, I find that when you're doing like written content, like, you know, like a sideboard guide, it's way easier to have that stuff be relevant for much longer than say a video where you're like, okay, well, here you go, I'm playing this thing, and then we go through the match, or even an interview, you know, because you know, we could go back to the interview I did with you, you know, what, like right after Baltimore. The entire metagame has changed since then, you know.
Yep.
I feel like
that was like the debut of Bowmasters, but
yeah, it was only so many people were playing it with Bowmasters. I remember I had an interview with Brian Koval at the tournament in like round 4, and I was like, hey, have you seen any Bowmasters yet? He's like, no. Like, what a dark time. Like, the darkest future happened. But yeah, doing like written content and getting that, like, you know, that moment in time that also you can glean something relevant out of it because you have more than just like a passing thought about what the, you know, about what the state of the metagame is at that time. You can, and you're able to, you know, we were talking about, like, there was a Patrick Chapin article that existed that was like about words mean things. And it was not it didn't even have to be a Magic article, but it was about his journey through doing commentary and stuff like that, and how he kind of grew as a person through the Magic community. And that's just something you don't get in video anymore. You know, like, not really. You don't get, like, and it would be preachy in video, I think, too. I think losing written content is like the major way to consume Magic content. There's something to be said there.
I mean, one great way is to book a coaching session. I mean, obviously.
Do you do coaching sessions?
I do. It's yeah. one of my favorite things to do, to connect with people all around the world. Typically fans, obviously, if they're willing to sit down on a one-on-one and pay me to go through a session. But it's to get, you know, being able to just home in on one person and work through things with them. And then you get that close connection with someone, the community that, yeah. I mean, I'm talking about people from Finland, Brazil, Germany, and immediately have that connection. You know what I mean? Within seconds, it's like you've been, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like you could have been middle school buddies, or if someone, you know, were a fly on the wall, they might think that.
Yeah.
So I do really enjoy that. And obviously I'm talking about my own, but really any deck that you're interested in, if you really want to level up with it, aside from just grinding on Modo, that next level, find a content creator or, you know, master of such decks that is willing to sit down with you. It's worth a lot.
Even if that person doesn't offer coaching, they guaranteed they know someone that does too.
Right. You know? Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. I did a coaching session with Brian Cook about a month ago, and like, man, enlightening. Just, you know, like, I've been playing this game for 30 years about, you know, and getting a moment to like have somebody like kind of take you to the curb and just be like, here's what you're doing. Here's what you're fundamentally doing wrong, you know? And then on top of that, like, here are the plays that can make you a better player, you know, like, but being able to like have somebody kind of give you that out of body experience, you know, and show you like, hey, like this is a plan for you to perform better right here. You know, that the coaching, right. I can't say enough good things about coaching.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. But you would ask as far as what I'm doing in terms of content, Twitch, YouTube, obviously we're talking about the Patreon. In addition to that, I did also start a podcast called Brews of Paradise.
Yes.
Yeah. It's myself, Killaby, Punishing Waterfalls, and Newton. We have been toying with, you know, bringing on guests as well. For the first 5 episodes, there were no guests. We've done guests the past 2. So we've had 7 episodes. We had Bosch and Roll on the first guest appearance. And then we just had Cyrus CG on the episode that just recently dropped. I don't think we're going to do guests every time, but obviously it's has kind of a skew towards brewing and a considerable focus on high level nitty-gritty strategy. So if you're really looking to level up in terms of even if you're not a combo player, you know, Newton is the creator of Cradle Control. Punishing Waterfalls plays just
everything.
Exactly. And crushes. He just won with an Affinity deck. That was crazy.
His only
loss in that tournament.
That's the Simulacrum deck, right?
Yes. Yep.
Oh my God. That deck looks so cool.
Mm. Yep.
If you love constructs.
Yep.
And I've listened to the podcast. Also that's a podcast that is part of the Phil Blackman intro network, right?
Yes, it is. Why would you have an intro made by anyone else?
Yeah, we've got the Phil Blackman intro network for all the legacy channels.
Yep. He's got the voice of an angel.
Yeah, man. Phil does. So eventually we have my parodies up on the Eternal Dirtles Patreon. And they're more like general magic comedy stuff. But Phil's stuff is actually like extremely talented, like, you know, like just musically inclined, like good, like I can't do what he does with his stuff. Like it's just
me neither.
On a different level altogether.
Yep. For sure. Yeah, I mean I when I needed to make an intro for the show, I didn't go searching around. I just how do I get in contact with Phil? There's really what it came down to.
So a shameless plug for Phil. If you're looking to start a podcast or any sort of Magic the Gathering content creation, reach out to Phil Blackman at forceoffil@gmail.com. Actually, I don't even think it's Force of Phil at Gmail. It's like Philly Wonka at 32 or something. Phil has an email that he needs to switch to the Eternal Dirtles email or something like that soon.
Yeah, I think I found him on Twitter.
Yeah, he exists on Twitter as Force of Phil. If you happen to be on the East Coast the next month, you can check out Phil's the last match. Phil wrote or helped produce a wrestling musical, and that's why he's been out for like the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and it'll be gone until the middle of May. And I'm excited because he's doing it in Philly, so I'm gonna see the one in Philly.
I did not expect that to be the reason why he's been away. I guess it's not a surprise that he is capable of doing such things.
Phil is a big wrestling dude. He was working for WWE for a while.
Oh.
Yeah, if you ask him, he'll send you the thing where like he's just like a guy in the background on the phone, and then like one of the wrestlers comes up and he's like walks by. Like, it's a bit, you know, he walks by, he's like, "You know where I'm going?" And Phil's like, I don't know. Where are you going? He's like, "The Big Show." You know, like, it's pretty wild. But yeah, Phil's a big wrestling head. And I have like a couple other friends that are big wrestling heads. I was a big wrestling head in like the 80s, in the early 90s. I didn't really keep up with it, but I did because WrestleMania was in Philadelphia this year. I did like watch WrestleMania, and I went back and rewatched some of the old WrestleManias because apparently I have access to those things on Peacock or whatever.
Yep.
So I watched WrestleMania 4 with Bob Uecker. Just a bit outside. The guy from like Major League or Mr. Belvedere. Going back and watching old WrestleManias is a real wild time.
I never really got into it, honestly.
I think everybody is either like, you're either one of those people who got really into it and then like walked away, you stayed into it, or you were like, you know what, my dad's gonna get mad at me if I body slam my brother into the couch and like someone's gonna go to the hospital.
I mean, I played a little bit of it on like Sega.
I think it's like the WrestleFest or WrestleMania video game. It was like an arcade game. That's what got me into it. Like you could be like the Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan, or like Big Boss Man. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to be you were a tag team and you'd have to fight against Demolition. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to be Demolition and fight the Big Boss Man.
For sure.
Anyhow, Tony, it's been a blast having you on. Thanks for indulging me in some ridiculous wrestling talk. like I said, everybody, you can find all of Tony's links below. Hey, book him for a tutoring session. And if you found this episode helpful or you just like the content, don't forget to like and subscribe to the channel. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for watching.
Thanks for having me.
Before you go, I need some help. Please subscribe to this channel and do your part to help sustain the legacy content ecosystem. Just subscribing to this channel goes a long way to reminding YouTube that people love and support this format. Now, if you really want to go the extra mile, you should think about supporting us through Patreon. Both the links for subscription and Patreon are right here. And if you're listening on an audio format, you can go to patreon.com/eternaldirtles. Thanks so much for watching.